This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Lauren Supan is a Manchester-area real estate broker and self-described political novice, who's one of four candidates in the Republican primary for the U.S. Senate seat currently held by Bernie Sanders. Today, we are talking with him as part of our ongoing coverage of candidates in contested races ahead of the August 14th primary. Lauren Supan, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you. It's good to be with you today.
What would you say are the top issues that define your platform?
Well, before I answer that, allow me to just correct one thing. Referring to me as a political novice is only half correct. I've been a student of political reality, political science, and legal cases all my life, growing up in a politically engaged family, being a civil rights activist before I was even a teenager. And if I may just tell a little story connected to that, when I was looking forward to being able to have the permission to drive from the state, I used to sit at my window and mentally park cars. What I mean is I used to tell myself when I would be making the turns and twists to get the car in the tight New York City parking spot. So by the time I was old enough to drive, I learned so quickly I was almost like a parking garage attendant. So why do I tell that story? Because I feel that everything I've done up until this point, though in terms of the electoral process, I'm a novice, has prepared me for the role of being a United States senator.
Well, now, I want to point out that you described yourself as a political novice, so that's where we get that from. But let me ask you, because if you're bringing in your experience here and how that leads you to political positions and to why you think you'd be a good senator, and let me draw you back to earlier in your career, and I understand that you worked for a food import-export company that worked with China to bring their agricultural products to market in the U.S., and so I'm assuming that must give you some perspective on import tariffs, and I wonder if you support the tariffs that President Trump has imposed on international imports and then the resulting retaliatory tariffs placed by other countries.
Okay, well, that's a very interesting question. I'll try to keep it concise since I know we only have a total of 10 minutes. Yes. Ironically, in 1980, when President Carter, the former peanut farmer, was still the president, there was a drought of American peanuts. And the American peanut industry, which included candy makers, peanut butter makers, was screaming for peanuts. We were well positioned beginning trade with China. So we and President Carter had to lift the embargo on imported peanuts and allow Chinese peanuts in for the first time in 50 years, I think it was. So we were able to establish a working relationship with the Chinese agricultural companies and bring in large amounts of peanuts. So the protective tariffs, which had been in place, which protected the American peanut farmers, were lifted because of the drought. My overall opinion about tariffs in general, if every country in the world had none, it would be great. But when we have been the subject of a one-way street where we have been able to export not only our products, but also our industry and our manufacturing base and be fully exploited by the countries of the world, and yet have tariffs charged to our country, our companies, and yet have almost a tariff-free situation, there's got to be a two-way street. And so although I'm fundamentally opposed to tariffs in principle, there are situations, perhaps like the current one, where it may be appropriate.
Let's talk about another big issue in Congress right now, and immigration. Do you support the president's approach of zero tolerance, or would you make changes to federal immigration policy?
Well, let me put it like this, Jane. When you go home tonight, presumably you're going to close the door to your house and you're going to lock it because you want to be able to control who comes in and does not come in to your house. And nobody would even think twice about the fact that that is a completely appropriate, prudent, and right that you have to exercise. Somehow, this simple logic gets lost when we talk about the boundaries of our country. The fact is that there is no such thing as a country if it doesn't, in fact, have legal boundaries, like Mexico does with its wall to the south, like Canada would have if and will have once they start realizing the impact that immigration is having on them. There is no country that doesn't have a defined boundary. So we need to enforce our defined boundary in the same way that that is consistent with the laws of our land.
Right, like but what changes would you make? Because this is a common dog whistle that Democrats support open borders. And I don't see that reflected in Congress by what actual Congress people are trying to implement in terms of immigration control. So what specifically would you
do? I beg to differ. If you look at what Ms. Cortez campaigning with Senator Sanders is proposing, is the precursor to eliminating borders. If you eliminate any control at the borders, if you eliminate ICE and you eliminate our ability to police our own borders, then you don't really have borders anymore, which in fact pretty much describes the situation in the last 10 or 20 years where our borders are so porous that people are pouring over, putting strains on the neighboring states' welfare systems, which are fed by the taxpayers of those states. And then they are even given the right to vote in our elections, even though they're not citizens. So, you know, a correction to this whole scenario needs to be undertaken. And it's a multi-pronged, complex solution to a very serious problem. And it needs to be undertaken in a bipartisan way. And there are a lot of different solutions, only the beginning of which would be a wall and the ability to control who comes in.
So you support the idea of a wall?
Yes.
What
Just
about
like I support Jane having a door to her house or her apartment.
What about federal firearms restrictions? What's your position?
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing that we are having this conversation in the safest state in the country, where we probably have the most or near the most number of guns per capita, and at the same time, the least amount of crime. It's not really a problem here, and yet those who would wish to take away the right to the Second Amendment would like to make it a problem here. Now, let me hasten to add that what's been happening nationally in schools and what was threatened to happen in Fairhaven, Vermont, is a very serious issue that does need to be addressed. And it needs to be addressed by a communion of police, teachers, and concerned parents to set up a situation where our students are protected at the place where the most damage can be done. But that's a separate issue from federal gun laws.
So do you favor a state-by-state approach, or do you favor a national federal approach?
I, in general, on almost everything, I favor a state-by-state approach because I believe laws make the most sense if they're enacted by the people who are most directly affected by them, understand the consequences of them, and are being asked to live by them.
What about health care? You forcefully reject Senator Sanders' desire to see a Medicare for all single-payer health care system. What would you like to see?
Well, let me hasten to say I totally appreciate the sentiment and the desire for all people of goodwill to see the most number of people get the best possible health care available. Where I differ is in my knowledge from having been a businessman, having been an observer of what works and doesn't work. Where I differ is in the idea that a monopoly, be it a government monopoly or a crony capitalist monopoly, can supply the best product of health care for 328 million Americans. My goodness, the government can't even, for the most precious citizens amongst us, a few million veterans, we can't even supply appropriate and satisfactory health care. And now we want to, at the cost of $32 trillion over 10 years, which nobody knows how it could possibly be paid for, we want to turn over the entire health care system to the monopoly and the tender clutches of the federal government, who took $2 billion to build a website, who cost 320 times the amount to fire a rocket that it costs private industry, who are giving us the joys of the post office and several other agencies that can't seem to even operate within the normal confines of what's considered effective business practices. So, no, I don't believe that I believe that Medicare for All is a wonderful slogan, and I understand why Senator Sanders has enacted it, because it does ring bells in people's minds. But here's the bell that I would like to ring in every citizen's mind, including my friends who have voted for Senator Sanders in the past, and that is simply this. Medicare for All does not work. The same time let me just finish this one point. The same time I heard Senator Sanders' resounding call for Medicare for All about a month ago, the General Accounting Office reported that Medicare will be bankrupt by 2026. So, yes, is that the Medicare for All we want for 328 million? We can't do it. It's not tenable. But there are great solutions, and there's tremendous hopeful signs right on the horizon
okay.
for American healthcare. But that's a whole other subject.
Well, that's Lawrence Zupan. He's running as a Republican for his party's nomination for U.S. Senate. Lawrence Zupan, I want to thank you for coming on Vermont Edition. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. I enjoy the privilege.
And listeners, you'll find other interviews with candidates in that and other races. They're all at vpr.net.